They're just two parents who happen to be dads. One called Harley, the other one is Wads. It's not really Wads, it's Wade! But Wade doesn't rhyme with dads. It's shitting with the door open.
This is Shitting with the Door Open. I'm Harley Breed with my best mate, Wade Nathaniel Duffin. And we've got a guest for the first time in phase two. It's my great mate, Russell Howard. Oh, how are you, mate?
I'm very well indeed.
I feel like I'm joining friend worlds together.
Yeah.
It's a great Venn diagram.
I felt your pressure yesterday, Harley, because it's a bit like, you know when you go on a stag do?
Yeah.
And you have two friends from different groups.
Yes.
And Harley was in the middle going, oh my God, how are Wade and Russell going to get on?
Please get along.
Is it going to work?
It was. It was like Mean Girls. It was Harley was very nervous.
Well, because Wade's my best mate, I've, you know, been friends with him my entire adult life.
Yeah, I don't mind being number two. That's
you're number two. You're close, but I had to have a word to him and say, don't fucking embarrass me.
Oh, really?
Don't look him in the eye.
No, not at all.
The only person I have to prep around is my brother. So I've down the years because
People need a heads up for Daniel.
And he needs a heads up for a way to behave. So I remember so my brother was 17 and we were at the Edinburgh Festival and Jason Byrne had just come off stage. And my brother would have looked 11 then.
Yeah.
And Jason had just come off stage and he went, Edric, and that went then. And then I have to pull my brother to one side and go, okay, all right, I should have told you. But you don't fucking say that. Like, that is the worst thing you can say to a comic.
Absolutely. What we do to rile each other up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I reckon it went.
So great.
Yeah, and he wasn't doing it to be an arsehole. It just comes so naturally to him. Do you know what I mean?
Speaking of stag do's, that's the most time I've hung out with your brother was at your stag do.
Yeah.
And he was in fine form, five stars.
Yes.
And you guys went to Vegas, is that right?
We went to Vegas, yeah. It was everything you'd imagine from an English stag do. It was like to the point where me and my brother were having like a fight in a car park. It works.
A fight in a car park of a karaoke bar.
And it was, but it was that.
We're singing Journey.
Yeah. I thought they were about to go to blows. Yeah. I really thought they were about to punch.
It's that kind of high-low thing of like, you know, one minute we're in this pool party and it's sort of decadent and silly. And then the next minute we're 15 or 13 again. And it's just fists and elbows. And because we're both, you know, small blokes, sort of like nobody's like, I guess they're going to fight. Nothing's really going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
And
it's probably how Snow White felt when, you know, they're just kicking off. It'd be fine. Do you know what I mean?
Wilsey Pitcher and me, who are all massive men, we're just standing watching on.
Nothing's going to happen. surely that's got to be like a sort of mockumentary style of the day-to-day life of Snow White. And the dwarves just go, fuck you little cunts, man. Fucking hell.
And just like pranking each other. Disgusting shit they're all doing.
Yeah, you say you've got one personality type, but I've seen you. You've been happy and you've been grumpy. This is confusing. What the fuck am I doing with my life? Stop singing. Jesus.
Who didn't flush again?
Exactly.
Bashville, like, no, it's you.
Yeah.
So we're on the road together at the moment. You're doing yet another Australian tour. Every time you come to Australia, I have another child.
Yes, that is true, yeah.
That's what's going on.
It's not related.
But I brought Wade along last night and he got to watch.
And it was so great. And it was so great to see three people, you, tour manager Kumar and Harley, all who have toured together many times, all who have this like kind of like real great bond, but also a lot of in jokes, a lot of in jokes, and those in jokes have turned almost into rituals.
Yes,
to like to come on the stage,
yes,
and to watch it as a bit of an outsider was so interesting. So interesting. I was loving all the little dances around, trying to make each other break, all the little fucking bits and pieces.
Yeah,
it was excellent.
It's odd, isn't it? It's sort of, I think because fundamentally we really like each other's company.
Yeah.
So it basically feels a bit like a gap year. Sort of we're traveling from place to place. We have really nice breakfast. We take the piss out of each other. Then, so we were in, was it Canberra?
Yeah.
And we were chatting about the fact that Sean Connery, when he says niece, it sounds like he's saying niche.
Yeah.
And honestly, for about half an hour, that kept us going. But just the idea of going, listen, I just want to be inside my niche. and just giggling and that. And I think it's just, it's so my wife often laughs, and I bet it's the same for most blokes. I don't know what it's like for women, but my wife will say if I hang out with my friend Sam, like my friend Pitcher, I hang out with Harley, she'll go, oh, what's happening? I have no idea.
Yeah.
What's going on in their lives?
There's no way of explaining
mate,
it.
Genuinely. Well, yeah. well, we pretended to be Sean Connery.
You're going to love this.
And made jokes about incest. Yeah, and yeah. It was very funny.
Yeah, exactly. But how is he? Oh, I have no idea. That's what friendship is for me. It's sort of when you can sort of just hang out with somebody and just be like, my friend Sam is probably my best mate. And whenever we hang out, we don't hang out often enough, but whenever we do, it's so silly. It's like the purest. So he'll pretend you've met Sam.
Well, like, this man. So we played indoor soccer while we were in Vegas.
Yeah.
And he came in a Mexican wrestling mask and a cape and played 3 games of soccer in that mask. Yeah, yeah. And, he's and nobody else was dressed up.
Yeah. Yeah. It was glorious. But he... yeah, I love him, but he'll wear like gold boots. The best way to describe
it. Well, Trump's got a new pair of those.
He's half Mexican, and he looks like he's a cross between sort of David Bowie and Bilbo Baggins. That's probably the best way.
Do you know what I mean?
Really, he's sort of, you know what I mean?
Perfect.
Bilbo Bowie.
Yeah, but he's somewhere in there. But whenever we hang out, you know, we almost communicate in this other language. And it, you know, when you're just hurting with laughter.
Yes.
And I think weirdly that's what we've got with us a lot, that it is impenetrable because it's this kind of protective force field of silliness.
Yeah.
That doesn't let the stress of performing in front of 2,500 people in, because you have time to get worried because you're talking about what Kumar's seen, or yes. you're just talking about a meme that you've watched that day, or
what the audience don't know,
having a cake. Like, I got abused yesterday. We went to a cake shop in St Kilda, and I said, I think I could have another cake, and that moment of weakness was enough.
I wouldn't even describe wanting another cake as a weakness.
No, like, yeah, that's what I mean. But suddenly it was like, oh, you're gonna have another cake, are you? But it was. But that's it, isn't it? It's sort of like this lovely, I don't know, maybe that's what it is. It's like this hyper playful state so that you can then be relaxed enough to go out and talk to people.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what the audience that's out there don't know is that there's another show happening side of stage.
Yes.
And I realized that because Wade was there last night and he was watching the show that was side of stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's these moments like when Kumar is about to introduce me on stage, you're trying desperately to get him to break and laugh.
Yes.
And it's just so unprofessional of all three of us.
Yes.
And silliness. And actually, it makes me have a great gig.
Yeah.
Because I go out there, we've just been idiots. But there's this whole thing happening.
Yeah,
that
it
side
brings
of stage.
Joy to you. I think it's joy to you. When you go out there, it's full of like positivity.
Yes.
You're ready to go.
I honestly think it's my one gift. I can spot when someone is nervous, and I don't think it happens with you, but I remember a friend of mine, Roisin Connerty, who's a brilliant comedian. She was in Montreal and I could tell she was scared. So she was just about to go on Montreal Comedy Festival, very nerve-wracking. And I told her a story about Ninia Benjamin. And I genuinely, she's a comedian in the UK, I think this is the best opening line I've ever seen. So Ninia would walk on, and I was telling Roisin this. She's like, I don't know what to do. And I was like, just Ninia once went on stage and her opening line was, yeah, 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 I'm a dirty bitch. and just like literally they were calling Roisin's name, and then she laughed, and then she kind of went on and had a good gig. And it's sort of that, if you walk on stage laughing, you can't be broken because you're in that state, you're in the realm.
Yeah.
And there's something about getting in the realm that it there's nothing quite like it, particularly if you're doing big gigs, if you're doing like arenas and you've got like my friend Steve Hall, you know, gets quite nervy before gigs. Kumar, we were just about, he was at the Albert Hall about to go on stage and Kumar patted him on the back and Steve Hall vomited on the floor. And then we were just like, and we're just like crying with laughter, going, "This is fucked, man." Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome. I'm all right. You know, it's
well better than me the other night. He patted me on the back and I almost shit myself.
Yeah, you were in
like,
right state.
Right before the show.
Yeah,
literally had to shit. Right, we talked about it on the last episode.
Yeah, God, it was bananas, damn. Man, wasn't it?
But speaking of getting in the right frame of mind to get on, you have an increasing amount of rituals over the years. Like, I've been working with you since 07.
Yeah.
And I feel like every time there's another thing added.
Yeah, it's weird.
I reckon the
it?
New one is the ginger shots.
Yes.
They were not on the last tour.
No, it's odd, isn't it? It's, yeah.
And there's heaps of those.
There are.
We've already talked about this, but I feel like they're more about the ritual of doing them than what they're actually doing. I know some of them have real practical purpose to them.
Yes.
But also, I think, if I'm correct, that it's the ritual of doing all of those things is almost just as important as the thing itself.
I mean, that's like the definition of rituals, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, it's that doing of the thing, the calming of the mind. It's that process to kind of get yourself into the zone.
I think we do that. I think it's sort of like we go... So we always eat at 5, like before a gig. So if we're doing a gig at 8, then we've got time to digest. Then we can have
perfect, by the way.
Then we can have a nice meal.
Just in time to shit or vomit right before the show.
but if we don't do that, we are like out of kilter, something's not right. And then we have the ginger shots, then we have the Chinese tea, then we have I have to do my voice warm-ups.
Vitamin C shot.
Vitamin C.
And banger C, as we
banger
say.
Banger C. Kumar then does her can of mother. And then and then I have weirdly sort of personal things that I do, little kind of things I say that I will never reveal. Absurd things, but I can't not say them. But it's funny, but then having said that, superstition is such a weird, it's a very nice thing and the most debilitating thing in the world, isn't it?
Because
you sort of, you realize things become this, I've got to do it. And you've started writing on your hand.
Correct.
Having never done that.
For 22 years.
It's fascinating. And now, if you did a gig without writing on your hand, you'd go to pieces.
Well,
so weird.
So in this show, I'm doing the same set each night. I've got a 20-minute spot.
Yeah.
Get out there. There's a
very good
to do.
By the way. And the tour is on sale and is excellent.
Thank you, man. Thank you. For some reason, it started with, because I do a lot of emceeing, having to write somebody who I'm bringing on name on my hand, regardless of how close I am to them.
Yes.
Just because somewhere the fear started that I was going to forget their name.
Have you ever done that?
I did it with you.
Did
it with you in 2007. We were in Alice Springs for Comedy Festival Roadshow.
Oh my God.
And you were the big deal. And I'm hosting. We just sort of got to know each other.
Yeah.
And you were the last act of the night. And I went, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage." And I had built it up and I put my arm out like that, and then my brain fucked off. And there was nothing there. And to make matters worse, when my brain kicked back in again, and they wouldn't have even noticed, I still have a handout pointing to where you were going to walk on from. And I just went, "Russell Howard."
Yeah. Oh,
that's how I introduced him. So yeah, it's happened a couple of times. So now I always have a pen in my pocket.
On stage?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. I haven't been doing it at your gigs because I'm not emceeing it. So once I'm out there, I do my job and I'm done.
I love that. You got a pen in your pocket.
Yeah.
Like a detective. That's so... Wow, that's... I think you might be the only comedian in the world that goes on stage with a pen in his pocket.
You never know when an idea will come to you.
Hang on a second.
Excuse me,
ladies and gentlemen. Just
that's not my pen. Whoops, put that one back. Here we go.
Why, honestly... What a fucking mad thing to do. Yeah. I get the writing on you, but to have it... But again, that's the fascinating thing about a ritual, isn't it? It's like, I've never gone on stage with anything in my pockets. Like, I have to take my cash card,
everything
out.
The pen.
And it has to go in the right little area, and then I have to brush my teeth, and it's all these
So now Russell also brushes his teeth before every show.
Yeah.
Did that always happen, or is it just slowly built up over time?
It's built up, so it's like this gradual thing of like, Well, I remember when we did the UK, when we were doing, when we first started doing arenas, the screens are very, you know, oddly, they're weirdly intimate, so you've suddenly got screens and everyone can see you. And then we kind of went through this phase of like going, I should probably wash my face before I go on. You just get so used to like not having to present yourself, and then you're like, they can all see. So maybe it was out of that. I don't know. But yeah, very, I don't know. It's, I don't know what it is about, but it's clearly this thing of habit and ritual. And Kumar is brilliant at that, and kind of is really in, and he, so even he, when he does the, and the part, the role that he plays in organizing a gig is incredible, because he'll do like a 2-hour sound check, and it's like fee, fi, fo, fum, e, I, and just, yes, he does a proper thing, which clearly boils the piss out of the local sound guys.
Yeah.
But it's why it sounds great. So it's sort of like, I don't know.
And they're huge rooms to get the sound right in. And it's so amazing to work with Kumar, because for almost the rest of my working year, I'm just turning up and I'm getting what I'm given.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's dog shit.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, well, this is the job, I guess.
Yeah.
And you walk on after Kumar's, like a tactician has gone through all the different elements, and you're like,
yeah, wow,
this is the best I've ever sounded.
It's a bit like how if you're a football manager and you have an assistant coach, and that you can go off and do a press conference, and you know your assistant coach is drilling the players.
It's got those fundamentals down.
Yeah, and it's, but that's whenever I talk about gigs and that, I always go, oh yeah, we did, because it genuinely feels like a we. Yeah. Like he, honestly, the role that Kumar plays in my life is like profound, and the very fact that we have this professional relationship, and yet like there was an incident that occurred in this gig in Melbourne, which is one of the highlights. So basically Kumar went out for a I mean, you guys know, but dear listeners, and it's difficult to tell this story without it sounding like a humble brag, but this has never happened.
It's very funny.
So,
and I'm interested that you're bringing it up, because I was like, I'm gonna bring that up.
Yeah, definitely
bring it up, which is perfect.
Well, because so Kumar normally goes out and he kind of assesses the crowd and sees what the atmosphere's like and whether they feel vibrant, excited, sullen, however. And he comes back and he gives us a report. But this time, as you guys both know, he was very, very flustered.
He was flustered.
He was sweating.
Yes.
And he had
was like Lassie, and someone had fallen down a well.
Yes, that's exactly it.
It's just so it's like, I'm ready.
And he came back and he went, I bring news, and he had to sit down. And I actually pulled Harley to one side, because I thought what had happened was that somebody had recognized Kumar.
That's why he was flustered.
And he was very excited.
You made a prediction in private. We had a private meeting, and then we came back and went, continue with your report.
Yeah. And then it turned out that he'd seen a blonde girl in front of my poster giving me a blowjob, looking like she was giving the poster a blowjob.
Yes.
And he was so excited.
And please look up Russell's current poster, because it's a very funny poster to do that to.
And it's kind of amazing that it's taken this long, and yet some genius Aussie girl, whoever she is, wherever you're out there, it is funny.
It is funny.
And then I mentioned it on stage, and now there's been a lot of photos of men, women, all blowing me.
Yeah.
Like that.
The best part about that girl, who's the original story.
The original blower.
And Kumar's exuberance and
the
excitement.
The original sin.
You mentioned on stage, and then the photo was sent to you from that girl's boyfriend.
Yes.
Who took the photo on his phone. That was always for him.
Yes. Yeah, I know. Wild, eh? But it's the fact that he's watching his girlfriend suck off a poster of me, and one of my friends is watching that. and then he is running back like a favela kid that's stolen a loaf of bread. Like, it was like that, wasn't it? He was just like...
He was like, I bring news.
Yeah. But like, it was so great. And so the very fact that silliness like that is going on backstage just before we go on stage is just, I don't know. It's so funny, isn't it? That the gig was great. It was fun. But we will always remember the show for that.
Absolutely.
And if you don't have those moments, I remember Chappelle talking about this, where he was basically, I think he now just invites all his friends to gigs.
Yeah.
And I sort of think you go through these phases with comedy where you kind of go, oh no, I need to concentrate. I really need to concentrate. And yet, Harley was amazing last night. Probably, not that you're not always amazing, but you were extra funny because you had a friend in.
Well, my best friend was side stage. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's that funny thing.
And I was playing it up for him.
Yeah, and there is something about those gigs where you have mates in and they're backstage and you're genuinely having fun, that you become the person you were before you had the courage to try and be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Because you're just like being funny.
When my brothers are in.
Yeah, exactly.
This has happened 100% of the time. I have never had a shit gig in front of my brothers. Because I know that whatever I do, there is two people that are going to giggle the whole time at everything I say.
Well, if it goes badly, it's even funnier.
Yes.
And then it's funny because it's everything's going badly. Right.
If I watch Harley bomb, it is the funniest thing I'll ever see. I fucking love it. I love it so much.
There's a great story. I bombed hard at this really rough gig in Sydney that other people had had war stories about, and I'd actually never had a bad one. It's called the Manly Boat Shed. And it's just a shithole. And I got up there to host, and there was nobody in the front of the stage. There was people right up the back of the room, and maybe 10 to 15 of them, and I reckon they were all German backpackers. And I fucking could not buy a laugh. Didn't get any reaction.
It was great.
About 15 cuts.
I was loving it.
He was having the greatest time, and I walked
off.
Just
in the back of your back. I was just watching the audience, watching him. Another drink! All round!
At the back with the Germans.
It was
this
Christmas
is not so good.
But like, I walked off stage just going, well, that's what it is. That was fucked, right? And as I walked past him to the toilet, he punched me straight in the guts. Oh, great. You think you're low? Boom, there it is. And that's what best friends do.
Yeah. It's something funny, isn't it? It's that, I remember years ago, Keris, years ago, my wife, she saw me do a gig, and I don't think I've ever seen her laugh that much in my life. I was doing this gig, there was probably five people in, two of them were reviewers, one of them was had a dog. It was just the Edinburgh Festival, and she was at the back behind the bar in this tiny venue, and there was water dripping down, and fuck man, she was gone. Like it was so sweet, but fuck me.
Laughing at your misery.
Just half an hour of great. Like me, you know, just trying everything and the dog laughing. But it's sort of in those moments that's where what is your relationship like with bombing? Because what always makes me laugh is that there's sort of a real sort of machismo about it, particularly with US comics where they're like, I love going out there, I love bombing. I honestly, no. I fucking hate it. I really...
Yes, absolutely.
But it's funny is that most people talk with a real kind of like reverence and a love of bombing.
No.
But
almost
me and
like
Al Pitcher...
Like an armor.
Yeah. Like oh yeah, man, I bomb. Yeah. I bomb all the time. I don't care. Yeah. How the fuck do you not care? No. It's the worst.
The only thing I like about bombing is you have to do it to figure out how to never do it again.
Yes.
And that's the only... Like, and I... All arrogance aside, I do everything I can on stage to make sure that doesn't happen.
Absolutely.
Because it's the worst feeling.
Yeah, man.
And I will change gears. I will change subject matter.
Yeah.
I will. In solo shows before, it's like 10, 15 minutes in. It's just not going well. I've got another 45. I'll stop the show down and talk to them about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are we going to do here? Because I want to have a good night. It's you guys paid. Let's all just have a good night.
Yeah.
And
then it
works.
Case,
it works. Absolutely. Yeah, everyone chilled out. I mean, you even did an element of it last night.
Yes.
In no way were you even close to a bomb. It was a spectacular gig. But there were these, I would say, quintessential Melbourne groans at certain things that didn't need to be groaned at.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember what it was. That was it. I sort of said, I was kind of going, I said, I'm envious of women. I'm not saying, I said something like, most of the women I know are kind, and that might not be the
That's
case.
Right.
That was what I said. I said, there might not be the case. You know, there might be women in here who are complete arseholes. And it got this, ooh.
Yeah, like you were saying something controversial.
And that's what I was going, well, no, statistically, there has to be a woman in here who's an absolute arsehole. And again, utter sort of silence. And then I kind of went, like, some women are arseholes. And it was kind of them beginning to get a laugh. And it was there was still a bit of a kickback. And well, no, we're not. And then I said, well, Myra Hindley is... And she's,
now who is that? Because I didn't
She's
know.
A serial killer from England.
Right.
And then I said, Myra Hindley, like, get absolute arsehole. Like, top shelf arsehole. Like, you know, she's your... If you were searching... Like, Hitler would be your man you'd leap to in the UK. Myra Hindley, evil face, child killer...
Right.
Yeah, for me, that's... But clearly, what's happened now is I've pulled out the name Myra Hindley. You don't know who she is. We're performing in Australia. That's why there's been such deafening silence.
Who is this Myra Hindley?
Yeah.
Did you know?
I knew the kind of vaguely named
Myra Hindley. Yeah, exactly. But then again, so... And then I start going, oh my God, how are you lot defending Myra Hindley? Probably because Myra Hindley sounds like... a cute old lady that makes cakes.
Hello, everybody. I'm Myra Hindley.
Are you talking about the lady from Bake Off?
Yeah,
You fucking had cake off.
Yeah, yeah, mate. That was it. But then it became so funny because you're in this sort of playful zone where you're just fucking around in front of 2,500 people. And then I hear you lot laughing, and then it sort of morphed into this story about you and my mum. And
yes, all of a sudden you were imitating your mother telling me to get a vasectomy.
That's right, yeah. and the first bit of that they really enjoyed. It was my mum being flirty with you. and then pretended that my mum's going to give you a vasectomy. And again, the crowd went, ooh. And again, it's like, how the fuck? Like,
so then you doubled down.
Yeah, I went
for it. And went hard. And in your mother's voice, which I've spoken to your real mum, is exactly like her, which is very funny for me. You got her to the point where she was going to use my hair to cut my balls off turn it into gold earrings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I really love about a comic. It's like, oh, you think that was too far? Watch this.
Yeah.
What was great about the entire thing was when you were on stage and you were making jokes just for Kamara and Harley.
Yeah.
There's a couple of moments there and they were laughing and it was beautiful. But I was crying with laughter backstage watching you. Tears were coming down my eyes. Like, this is the funniest. Hop out of the theatre into the car, like to leave. And I thought you just smashed it. But your instant reaction was the bits that didn't go that well, that were like 0.01% of that time. They're like three little moments. And that's what you were thinking about rather than the 99.99% that just fucking smashed. And I just found it so interesting.
Yeah, but it's that, like, I remember my dad saying to me when I was, like, my dad, you know, looms large in my life, and he's such a fascinating weirdo. He's always been this sort of barometer. I remember my dad saying to me when I was like 14, he goes, "Think about you, son, you'll never be happy." it's sort of, we both knew he was right. And he was basically going, you know, unfortunately you've just got too much of me and I'm not happy, and that's that. and then we just drive in silence. But
let's not talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. But it is that thing of like going, you sort of, I don't know where it comes from, but it's that thing of you're being such a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And just want, it goes back to not bombing. You want to make people, you want to be liked so much. You want to make it so great so that people, you can justify yourself. Is very weird. And you come off, I bet you loads of comics are like it. I bet loads of performers are like it. I bet Taylor Swift comes off and is just like, fuck, did you hear that? I fucked that song.
Yeah.
Completely oblivious.
And the audience has no idea.
No idea, because I wouldn't have picked up on it. And do you think you don't want to like let the audience down or let yourself down? Or is it a bit of a combo?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's like you... I think it's about wanting them to feel the sense of pride in liking you.
Yeah.
I remember Chris Martin said something. He goes, it's very difficult to admit that you're a Coldplay fan because Coldplay aren't particularly cool. So it's our duty to make songs so great that those people can hold their heads up. And I sort of think that thing, because comedy is so, you go in and out of waves of being cool and then not cool, and there's a degree of sneer to it that you kind of want to be, you want people to be able to say without any shame, oh, I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I think that I see it so many times where I've seen comics and you just kind of go, they get away with stuff because they're in a certain sort of sector of the world, whether it's sort of far right or far left. And it just, I don't know, if your barometer is to make people laugh, it's when it doesn't work, you're like, fuck.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's what I came here for.
Yeah. But also it's just internal niggles because you're just trying to, you know.
Interestingly, like stories about your dad are great for me because I go, oh, that's why he's a comic.
Yeah.
You know, because I think you present as this, you know, you've done a heap of television, you've been very successful, you're good looking.
I was once a great beauty.
Do you know what's funny?
Fucking right. And then, absolutely.
And then you hear your stories of your family, you're like, oh, he's fucked up. Right.
But it is that thing that, like, when my dad heckled my brother during the wedding with that unbelievably funny and cruel heckle, that actually happened. And in that moment, all of my friends and everyone who was there was like,
Now we get it.
Now we get it. Now we're.
And which it, was, by the way, your dad heckled your brother during his best man speech with, "I don't. It's because I don't love you.
Because I don't love
which
you."
Is which a is a hectic thing to say to a child at any moment in life.
Well, yeah, at yeah. any heckle at anybody.
Yes.
Yeah. Anywhere on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because I don't love you. Like, oh, that's
yeah. Well, it's what happened. Everyone was like, "Fucking hell, dude." And what actually happened is my brother goes, "Fuck off, Dave." So because to make it weirder, my brother calls my dad Dave.
Great.
To make the relationship even weirder. So whenever my dad tries to be funny, my brother will be like, "Good one, Dave." it's those small. So whenever my mum calls my brother up, and I've seen it happen, it's exquisite. So he'll have her on loudspeaker whenever. So my mum will call and my brother, without fail, goes, "Who's this?" Like that. And the anger in my mum's, "It's your mother, you know who I am." I think it comes down to, I was telling this story that I told it once before a TV show, that basically when me, I think I was 12 and Daniel was 10, we were putting a gate on a wall with our dad. And, you know, it was a heavy gate. And we were trying to, you know, when you're just trying to lift a gate and then get the screws to go down.
Yes,
and
yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's awkward, like, and like hanging awkward, a door.
Yeah, exactly. Hanging a door and outside.
Probably the first time you've hung something that size. Mate, as well. Like, you know, you don't know what you're doing.
It's raining.
Yep.
We're 12 and 10. Just, you know
your
what I mean?
Your dad is already pissed at you.
Just furious. Do you know what I mean? And he says, he goes, "Come on, stop acting the goat." Right, that's what he said. He went, "Stop acting the goat," and I sort of held my hands out and went, and I waited for the punch, and it didn't arrive, and it was like this because my dad was laughing,
right.
And then I sort of figured out, I was like, I think I'm a comedian, so my mum doesn't cry and my dad doesn't hit me.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like,
what a bio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But a healthy way to enter that adulthood.
Fucking madness.
If he'd come any other way, he would not be the comic that he is. Yeah. Like, that is, but that's how you're on.
But it's so true.
It's your origin story.
Yeah, yeah. But it's. I remember telling that to a therapist, and he laughed and he wrote it down. And I said, "What are you doing?" He goes, "Oh, I'm doing a book." And you're like, "Ah, shit." And then I started really performing at these therapy sessions so I could make the book. Fucking
a true professional.
What an illness.
Never off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally. So it's literally going, fucking, I'll rip that. Like, then I had to stop.
I'm going to get a whole chapter out of this. Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, it's sort of that. It like, but the funny thing about that story is the role that comedy has played in my family is incredible, because my family now are super tight, brought together through comedy,
yeah.
through laughter, and it's
and
a
bit of darkness, it sounds like.
But
well, not like dark yeah, darkness, yeah, yeah. But, you know, like a bit of like hard times.
Yeah, but I just but it's that odd thing of, I think my dad had a very difficult life and then it was super successful and kind of has mellowed out, and now with my sister's kids is so sweet and lovely, and
yeah,
is
wow.
a really great man, just that went through a time of it, but was this kind of like incredible like leader for us.
Yeah.
Almost, do you know what I mean? Like it's very
it's
odd.
Nice that he gets another go at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah. That he rolls around, and now as a granddad he can be a different kind of
yeah.
version but of himself.
Different kind of role model, yeah.
But it's funny though, isn't it? It's sort of like, I don't know, the role of being a dad is like, I mean, this is, you know, it's a podcast about being a dad. And
occasionally.
Mainly it's about
but,
yeah.
But I think also, like, the cool thing is, like, 50 years ago, there's not a world in which two dads can meet up.
And even talk about it.
And talk about yeah. being a dad. Yeah. With like, and it's sort of, you know, let alone record it so other people can listen to
yeah.
it. Do you know what I mean? And it's sort of, I think that's the big thing where when you talk about being a parent, and it's really difficult. It's incredibly difficult. And you've got to balance your fucking job and your relationship, and you've got to raise these kids. It's really, it's clearly hard.
And your dad had absolutely no guidance on that.
No, that, well, and I think that's it.
Zero.
Zero. And yeah. I think that I don't think a lot of people, understand how it must be so difficult to have kids if you never had. So my dad never had a dad, so that had a profound effect on him.
Sure. Yeah.
So he doesn't quite know how to.
He didn't have that model. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Whereas, in general, we can only speak in generalizations. Women were with their mums all the time.
Yeah.
And saw their mums being a mum.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the funny thing, because my mum is just the sweetest, loveliest, maddest human being, and they're perfect for each other. My mum and dad. They're such. That they could not be more different. They're so diametrically opposed, but it all makes sense. And there's photos of them with the kids. I remember reading my dad's diary. What a mad thing this is. So my dad had me when he was at university, and he went to university on a scholarship. He had a kid. He was the only one there with a kid who has a kid at uni. And there's bits where he kind of took Russell to the beach. The day before the exam, and then it was like, did the exam, I reckon I got 85%, I absolutely nailed it. Like, it's proper, like, psychopathic, but doing these exams, and then he got, like, the leading medal for the highest grade for engineering in the country when he was at university.
Whoa. So he's proper smart.
Smart, he is the most, there is, no one has determination like my dad. It's phenomenal.
Well, except for his eldest son. Because I wanted to ask you about, like, why do you keep going? How do you keep turning up? Like, I love comedy, I love doing it, I love working with you, but your schedule is relentless. And has that come from your dad's work ethic?
Yeah, I guess so. But also, I love it. I think it's a very... I know so many people that don't have jobs, that I know lots of people that have jobs, but that we have a job where you can put every thought you've ever had through this thing, and it's the same. Why does, you know, Sebastian Faulks pick up the pen? What, like, it's sort of, we were saying yesterday, I've got no reason but that I must.
Yes.
And it's sort of, is
that
where
drive,
you just
drive, that passion,
but it's like, it's so much fun. It's like, there is a moment yesterday when I was in the dressing room and I heard you two coming off stage, and I heard you say, oh, look, it's twins. And I heard Harley howl with laughter. And that is a moment, because what that is, basically a joke that Harley told on stage. And then Wade was like, oh, you should, what about that? And Harley
he punched
like,
it up.
Fuck, that's funny. Yeah. And the laughter you got was the laugh, which I knew that laugh, I knew that frequency, because what that meant was, I'm doing that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you knew then you had a new sound for the audience. And I think that's it. If you look at, like, Billy Connolly, like, I bet you, like, that's when you know you're done as any kind of creative, particularly a stand-up. If you don't, if you have a new idea, a new bit, that you fucking wild horses can't stop you from that need to, I have to show the world this pebble I found on this beach.
Yeah.
I found the pebble.
You get so excited.
Yeah. And it's that, I think. So when you sort of say, what drives you? It's that excitement from going, like, that's the thing. Even that thing about, like, Coles and Woolworths. That will only
it was great last night.
That will only work here.
Yes.
But I was going, oh, is this a thing? And then you went, yeah, I think so. And then it's that excitement of, it's like showing magic tricks. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And you've sat in your room and you figured out a new magic trick.
And you're ready to show, like, the class at show and tell, like, yeah. And I'm going to blow these fuckers away with this new thing that I've been working out. Yeah, so great.
I think that's what it is. So maybe that's what it's about. It isn't, it's not kind of financial or anything like that. I think it's
it never comes across that way.
Yeah, it's because there's just the fun of, I mean, what else are you going to do as well? And hopefully, you know, like, hopefully I'll be moving into a different phase of my life and we'll see what happens, but, you know.
Well, you're excellent, mate. And I love being on the road with you. And thanks for coming to Yarn with us.
Oh, I really enjoyed that.
Thanks,
what a treat.
Yeah, that was great.
Banging.
Excellent. Thanks for being here. And Wado.
Fucking The Remains is out now, you rat
fucks.
I'm fucking pumped about it. So give it a listen.
Get on it.
Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. We're good to go.
I'm so excited. Yes. Bye.
Dads.